After growing up in Detroit, Syrian-born Rhea Elias moved to New York's gritty Lower East Side before the area was gentrified. In her memoir, Harley Loco, a memoir of hard living, hair, and post-punk from the Middle East to the Lower East Side, Ms. Elias, a musician and hairdresser, talks about her struggle with drug abuse and the toll it took on her personal and professional lives. Her book is published by Viking. I'm very pleased that it has brought Rhea Elias to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
So how did you come to be called Harley Loco?
Harley Loco. Well, it's kind of a funny and harrowing story, but I ended up in Rikers Island.
Why?
For things that I didn't do.
Well, you talk about a lot of things you might have wound up in jail.
No, I definitely wound up in jail. But that time, Leonard, I didn't do it. But I was in, it was sale of a controlled substance, or, you know, the, they thought that I was selling a controlled substance anyway. So I went to Rikers Island, and I was there, and I had these Harley Davidson boots, right, that I wore all the time. And, you know, when you go into Rikers Island, you get to keep your shoes if they don't have your size. So we used to call them Dex or Air Giulianis, the ones that they would give you to actually wear there. And they let me keep my boots because I had a size 10 foot. So I was in my cell one day, and this woman came in, and she wanted those boots. She wanted the boots, and she came at me, and she said, "I'm from Harlem, and I'm going to take those boots." And, you know, I was sick and tired of everything, and I just, in that one moment, I saw red, and I put my feet back, and I kicked her in the chest, and I said, "I'm from Detroit, and you're not taking anything from me." And she flopped into the door and fell, and then I ran out and yelled for the corrections officers. And they came and reprimanded her, and then all the girls in the cell were like, "Oh, my God, she's crazy." So they called me Harley because of the boots, and Loco because I was crazy. And that's how, and that name stuck for quite a while.
So people who hadn't been with you at Rikers knew that you were Harley Loco?
People, well, after Rikers, I went to a women's prison association for 6 months. And the name kind of carried on into there, yes.
How did you wind up in New York? How old were you when you came here?
I was 23.
Wasn't Detroit enough fun place to live in?
Detroit was wonderful. And I always say Detroit is a great place to leave and then go back to because, you know, I took it in Detroit. I took the music scene as far as it could go back then. I was doing sort of
the early days of punk.
Yeah, well, sort of after punk and between the real electronic scene, there was a scene of like a electronic new wave, which I was really, so it was like a post-punk scene that I was really a huge part of. And there didn't seem any room to grow, and especially for hair as well. So, and I just really wanted, like, New York was always in my blood.
But then you moved to Alphabet City when that area was depressed. It's changed a lot since.
Boy, has it.
But did it feel like you'd just gone from Detroit to Detroit?
Well, Detroit, yes, in a way it did. But there was, you know, there was no cap on Alphabet City. There was no, it was like the sky was the limit no matter where you were in New York. So just that within itself, whereas Detroit felt very limited at the time.
You started experimenting with drugs in Detroit?
Yes, at a very young age.
What was that all about?
I think for me it was a way to really fit in. You know, I didn't speak English until I was here for maybe a year and a half, so until I was almost 10.
But you come from a traditional family, and I'm assuming the people who come out of those families are the least likely to experiment with drugs.
The least likely to experiment, yes, but I really feel like at the age that I came, it was such a traumatic sort of alienation. And I was never American enough, and I was never Syrian enough, because I literally came in that age where I was just, you know, transposing as a human.
But young enough to have lost the accent totally, because
I worked on that. I worked on that, Leonard. I would sit in the mirror and literally try to lose it. And it's funny because now when I listen to my sister speak, I think, oh, what a wonderful thing. What wonderful accent it is. I wish I had some of it now.
Well, you could probably go back to it, could you? So your family left Syria. That's before all of the current troubles. Were there troubles at the time?
There was just some nationalization going on of, you know, taking properties. And
your family was Christian?
My family's Christian.
Did that cause trouble?
You know, I don't really, I mean, I don't really pretend to know about that. I just know personally how it felt, and it felt very, there was an angst in the air. And my father, more than religious controversy, it was about education for him. And so he wanted to leave and give us the biggest opportunities to have a great education, not to have my brother serving in military. And I know some of his land was definitely, there was nationalization, it was being taken away, so he just thought, get out now.
Well, right now, religion is a major factor in the civil war that has broken out in Syria.
Absolutely.
The Christians, to some degree, align themselves with the government rather than with the rebels because they see themselves as being protected along with the Alawites and a few other minorities. But that's a whole other story.
Uh-huh.
You wound up in Detroit. Why Detroit? Why did your family choose to go to Detroit?
Well, my uncle lived in Detroit, first of all. And second of all, Detroit is Dearborn, which we didn't actually move to, but has the largest community of Middle Eastern people outside of the Middle East. So, but my uncle did live there, and so he was our sponsor, and we just moved where he said, basically.
And then people want to go where there are others who speak the same language, who
Absolutely.
Eat the same foods.
Absolutely.
But you were still in a minority. How did the kids treat you?
Well, bullying at its finest back then. I was always treated like a freak. And it was, you know, where we came from, like my mother was very influenced by the French and she sewed and we had these great, like now when I look back, I'm like, oh my God, that outfit was so beautiful. But then, you know, I just wanted to fit in. I wanted to be under the radar and, you know, kids were very mean.
On your website, you have a short film about a young girl being ridiculed by her elementary school classmates because she brings fried lamb brain, typical of Syrian cuisine, for lunch. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that was based on a real experience.
Absolutely real experience. And my mother, you know, before pita bread was popular, she would put, you know, sliced tongue, all the things that you get at the gastro restaurants now, like they're really amazing cuisines now, she would put in there and we'd go to school and it was just, you know, frightening for other people.
My guest is Rhea Elias. Her book, Carly Loco, a memoir of hard living, hair, and post-punk from the Middle East to the Lower East Side. Hair because you became a hair cutter?
Yes.
Now, was that before the music or simultaneous with the music?
Simultaneous with the music. It kind of came hand in hand. I mean, I was at a club and a kid asked me to cut him a mohawk with a clipper that he had brought into the bathroom. And I was like,
just like you look like the right person to do that
sort
of thing?
Yeah, like you're here and I have these that I nicked from home and can you give me a mohawk? And I thought, I can do this, sure. And I basically almost closed my eyes and did it. And then all these kids started calling me for haircuts. So I thought, wow, this could be a really cool thing for me to do.
So you became the person responsible for the mohawks and the purple hair and all of that stuff.
I wasn't responsible, but I definitely was added a lot to it, yes.
And then you started playing music?
And then I started playing music. Just, you know, it was such a free expression. And especially in that time where, you know, you didn't have to be a musician to start with, you could just experiment and make music and layer it because the electronics were there, and that's what got me into it. Yeah.
So you're doing it electronically, and you were picked up by a decent record label, weren't you?
Well, I was picked up by a wonderful, wonderful manager who gave me a development deal, and I had a great industry show at the New Music Seminar here in New York. And so it was a development deal. And I had three labels that were really interested.
And then what happened? Drugs?
Yes.
Well, you're not the only musician who did drugs.
Yes. Yes. I'm not the only musician that did drugs. I just happened to do them before I actually got a foot in the door, you know.
And are you still playing music?
I am. I started playing again maybe 12 years ago. And I'll be playing two songs at my reading tomorrow on an acoustic guitar, which I learned just learned how to play.
Well, we'll talk about the reading in a moment.
Okay.
But what career do you identify with? Hairdresser, musician, filmmaker, author? Now you're also doing real estate, aren't
you? I've been a real estate agent for about 8 years. And, you know, I just love the city so much that whatever day brings whatever hat. I mean, right now I'm identifying with writing because the last 4 years I've been at one with this book.
And Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love, wrote the introduction to the book.
Yes.
Did you study with her?
In every way but the writing way, yes. She's been my mentor, just my wonderful friend, and just such an amazing, amazing person to sort of follow her motto, you know.
Well, she must have encouraged you to write this memoir.
Absolutely.
But it also must have been difficult for you to write about some of the things that you have here, like your the drug abuse, personal relationships. You hid your sexuality from your family for a long time. Did they finally learn? Many people in your family after reading the book about your life in the Lower East Side?
Yes. I mean, you know, my immediate family always knew what was going on. And now I guess it's, you know, ricocheting and going out. And, you know, it's a vulnerable place to be. And I'm really sort of at one with that myself. I'm really glad that I put it out there. It was a very healing experience for me. And, you know, they're not happy about a lot of things, I'm sure, but my voice, my book, my life.
Well, were you surprised that your mother revealed an interest in your sexuality near the end of her life?
My mother was a wonderful, wonderful, very curious being. And I was shocked at that moment, and it was the circumstance that was really – that was the only circumstance that it could have gotten me to go there with her. But, yeah, I was surprised, you know, and afterwards
she
we would just – she loved me, and I feel like, you know, she just really wanted to know.
Well, were they shocked by how bad things got for you? The drug abuse led to you being homeless for a while.
Yes.
You really sunk to pretty much the lowest depths.
Absolutely.
How did you finally quit? Well, you quit a number of times, actually, didn't you?
Probably over 20 times, yes.
Do you still struggle with the seductive quality?
I don't. You know, Leonard, I have seriously, since that two-year mark after I first got clean, and I had that experience where I was really seduced by it and I wanted it, and then the drug dealer wouldn't give it to me and the cop was following me around saying, Elias, get home. And that night when I got home, something happened inside of me where I lost all of that craving, all of it. I mean, I'm so blessed because I don't think about it. I don't dream about it. Me. Like, how could that have happened to me, who lived every moment, every 20 minutes, you know, with something going into my arm? I just can't believe it. I feel like I've been plucked, you know, from the depths of that. And it's a really beautiful thing. I mean, if I, you know, I look at people and I tell them, if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Well, you've escaped a number of difficult situations. Born in Aleppo, we know what's going on there. Mm-hmm. You've left Detroit. There are the city's been taken over by Michigan. Lower East Side actually turned out to be okay. You still there?
I'm not there right now. And the only reason I'm not there is because I had to move to Chelsea so I could be on the West Side to drive out to my writing house.
Rhea Elias will be speaking with Elizabeth Gilbert and performing tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store in Tribeca on 97 Warren Street. Her book, Harley Loco, a memoir of hard living hair and post-punk from the Middle East to the Lower East Side, It is published by Penguin. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.